Hi, and welcome to The Get Real Show, brought to you by Keystone Partners Group, the show that strips away the myth and the mystery surrounding success in the real estate industry. Today, I have a very special guest, Nathan Gutman. Nathan is a mega agent from the Allentown market area, and we're very excited to have him here with us. He's got a great story and some great success. Nathan, thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So tell me about your business, Nathan. Tell me about what your business looks like today.
I have a real estate team. Mm-hmm. We have four agents on the team, a couple support staff, located in the Lehigh Valley. Also, we have an agent that's located in Montgomeryville and working as an agent, buyer's agent only. And we're looking for another agent in the Bluebell office as well. So we're starting the expansion, but just starting.
Okay. So what? Just an idea, how many transactions are you doing outside the Lehigh Valley now?
Outside like? Lehigh Valley, we'll do at least 25 transactions this year.
Wow, that's significant.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Sure. So tell me a little bit more about the number of units maybe that you're doing and the volume that you expect to do by the end of 2016 and maybe versus 2015.
Okay. Last year, we did 78 units in total. This year, we're going to do well over 100 units. Mm-hmm. Last year, we closed $17 million worth of business. And I believe we're poised to do around 22,000 this year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's some great growth.
Thank you. Yes, we're happy with it.
Yeah. So tell me about your team, a little bit about the people around you, because it's not just you, is it?
It is not just me, by any means. I have a listing manager. I'm the listing specialist. I have a listing manager that helps me with listings, and he actually manages the listings. So my job and role is to get the listings. Mm-hmm. And his job is to manage the listings and take it to close.
Right. So once you have them, they take it over.
Correct. If all goes well, I may not even meet the sellers again. Mm-hmm. If all goes well.
If you need to, you can.
If I need to, I can.
Sure.
I also have two buyers, a specialist in the Lehigh Valley, and they take care of our buyers that come from our advertising campaigns and are advertising our listings. Mm-hmm. And they are a gal named Amy, who's been with me for 9 years. And a gentleman named Greg, who's been with me for now a little over a year.
Mm-hmm. So you have buyer specialists that deal with all the leads from your listings?
Correct.
Now, do all the leads from those listings come to you? Or do they go to your company and then is there a percentage that come to you? How does that work? How's that relationship?
Well, and if I understand you correctly, what happens is there's many different modes of marketing that we do.
Yeah.
I'm usually the first touch, not always, but usually the first touch. So when a lead comes in, I'm the person that contacts that lead, qualifies that lead, and then presents that lead to our buyer specialist, if need be. I pick and choose which one gets that lead, and there's many different ways that I pick and choose that.
Mm-hmm. My question really was the relationship between yourself and Keystone Partners Group and how leads move there. When you advertise your listings, what happens to all of those leads? You get all those or do you get some of those? Or
no, we get all those leads.
Okay.
That's very, very important.
Yeah.
And that's the key to our success is our leads, our listings, our leads. So what happens is a lead comes in, for instance, off of a sign.
Yeah.
So we have many signs out there. It goes into the front desk of Keller Williams. They qualify whose lead that is. Mm-hmm. It's usually very simple to figure out whose lead it is. Mm-hmm. But if not, they actually do some investigating work. Because they know that the person that lead is being generated from is the person that lead needs to go to. Hmm. And then they contact us, usually contact myself, and say, we've gotten a call from your sign.
Kind of like my listing, my lead.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. And I imagine that would be critical to have the number of leads necessary to have buyer specialists.
Absolutely. That's one of the most important factors.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your buyer specialists. Are they full-time agents? Are they part-time agents? And how do they get compensated?
Okay. Well, I technically have three, including the one that's in Montgomeryville.
Mm-hmm.
So the two that are in the Lehigh Valley are full-time agents. Mm-hmm. They get compensated on a percentage split, which is negotiated through me and themselves, for the buyers that they bring into the team. They may get a little bonus if they bring in their own buyers from their own personal sphere.
Sure.
And generally, though, their buyers are coming from our marketing plans. They're doing open houses and calls coming from our listings. Mm-hmm. Now, the gal in Montgomeryville, she's an agent on her own right. And so I have an agreement where I am giving her a referral fee, a split. Mm-hmm. And she's acting as my buyer specialist for the leads that come in off of my listings and my calls in Montgomery and Bucks County.
Mm-hmm. So your buyer specialists are doing I'm assuming a lot of transactions based on the leads coming in from your business that you've developed over time.
Correct.
Would you figure that would be probably more transactions than they would be doing as a solo agent?
Absolutely. Hmm. You know, I think that's why they stay with me.
Sure.
You know, because
that's
they're able to do more. They're able to do more business with me and with our team than without our team. Hmm. They're also able to get a lot more support because there's backdoor support. I have two admins that help them with transaction licensee work. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure that timelines are being met. A little bit of oversight. Mm-hmm. They seem to really like that. Sure. It's a level of protection for themselves and our whole team.
So instead of having to do everything and keep a lot of balls in the air, which would keep their number of transactions lower, they hand some of those other balls off so
Correct.
They can do more transactions.
Absolutely.
And have it a win for you and a win for them.
And so that they have more hands handling the ball so they don't get dropped.
Nice. Yeah, sweet. Tell me about the people that are on the administration side. Aside from listing management, what other things do they do that you no longer have to do?
Well, they do a lot. And that would be a long conversation if I really was able to articulate everything they do, but I'll give you some examples. I'll give you some examples. Number one, I have one gal that just makes sure that all the paperwork is properly done, that all the legal issues that we can handle on ourselves are properly done so that there's no skipping or falling or tripping as far as anything legal for the client or for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up taking that file, giving it to our office, which also does a layer of protection for our clients and ourselves. We follow up on all of our leads and all of our showings. When somebody has a showing and an agent shows our property, mm-hmm. it's very important to get good feedback.
Right.
So I have a couple gals in the office and they take turns doing it, where if we don't get the feedback in the timely manner, usually 24 to 48 hours, or the feedback is just minimal and we're asking 6-7 questions, we're only getting one answer, they will contact that agent and say, thank you for the feedback, we'd like to get a little bit more, and they would input that for us. So they're helping us to understand what the public likes or dislikes about our property, but they're also helping our clients better understand what the public likes or dislikes about their properties.
I see. So you have, of course, there's a lot of things that have to get done in the real estate world, we know that, and you have a to-do list, I'm sure, and you have a do-not-do list.
A do-not-do list of what I'm not going to do
right.
myself?
Which are the things your team does.
Correct.
Fair to say?
Fair to say.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your background, because I'm always curious to see kind of how things started for agents like yourself. How did you get into real estate?
Well, I remember when I was about 15 years old, I was at my father's company picnic. Mm-hmm. My dad was a broker in New York City in the Empire State Building.
Oh, okay.
He did not practice real estate once I was a kid. He was a businessman in different businesses, but he still would purchase and sell real estate. So I grew up in a family purchasing and selling properties to fix them up and flip them,
okay.
some to hold. But also, I went to his company party, and there was a gentleman there in a very fancy car. This is going back quite some time.
You remember what kind of car?
I do remember what kind of car, and it will not seem so fancy right now, but it was a Toronado, which in those days was a cool car to have.
Yeah.
And he had, this gentleman, one of the four first cell phones in the Lehigh Valley.
Hmm.
And he was a good-looking guy, a lot of charisma. And when he drove up, it was like in those days, Tom Jones drove up.
In the Toronado.
And all the women got around him, and there was a hubbub. And mm-hmm. I said to my dad, what does that guy do? And he said, that guy is a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a God's honest truth. And he said to me, I said, could I meet him? He said, sure. And I met him, and actually, I don't know if I could say his name, but he's at Keller Williams now.
Really?
He is. Huh. He ran a very successful real estate practice for a long time. And I talked to him and I asked him what he thought about the business. And he said, Nathan, I could afford a great car. I have a cell phone when nobody else even knows what it is. And I like it. Life is good.
That's awesome.
And I kind of got the bug at that point. I didn't go into it right away, but I got the bug at that point.
Is he in a Keystone Partners Group office with Keller Williams or another office?
Oh,
okay.
He's in the Lehigh Valley
okay.
office.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. That's really neat.
Yes, it is really cool.
So you have an entrepreneurial background. Not only was your dad entrepreneurial, but you became an entrepreneur at a relatively young age, right?
Correct.
What did you do before real estate that kind of prepared you for your success here?
Out of college, I opened up a commercial laundry. It started out very small.
Mm-hmm.
I did linen rental, napkins, tablecloths, sheets and towels for motels, you know, for nursing homes.
Mm.
And then I started getting into garment washing.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran that business pretty successfully. I had 45 employees and 5 trucks on the road. And our territory was the Lehigh Valley, going all the way down to Bucks County and New Hope, and then into New Jersey.
Hmm.
And sold it about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And decided, okay, I have enough money to retire for a little bit, and started figuring, what will I do? And from that, I guess that bug came to play again.
Yeah.
And out came the idea of being a realtor.
So what did you learn as an entrepreneur in commercial cleaning that you brought forward to real estate? What are some of those things?
The one thing that I think I needed to do right away, which I don't believe other realtors need, and it was because of my background, is to have an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I right away felt that I needed an assistant because I always had an executive secretary. So for me to be on completely on my own felt a little foreign. Although mm-hmm. in my role in my laundry, my main role, I had a plant manager to run the plant, but I was a salesperson. So sales always came natural and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had support staff.
Your strength.
Right. Mm-hmm. True. So what I needed to do is, when I started real estate, I kind of jumped the gun a little and immediately hired an assistant mm-hmm. to be able to help me out.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's one of the ways where I started a little bit differently than maybe the model mm-hmm. is.
In hindsight, was that to your advantage?
I have mixed feelings in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I would have gotten my feet better wet if I didn't have an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been able to wear more hats from day one and really learn the business 100% instead of starting to delegate some of the responsibilities out right away.
So you'd be learning what your assistant was doing first.
Correct.
And then leverage it.
Correct. And I think what it may have slowed me down just a little bit, because I took what I thought my assistant should do in a different type of business and put it into the real estate business,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't always work.
Yeah, sure. So what were some of the influences that were strongest for you in your first week, month, 6 months in real estate?
Well, I interviewed an agent, and I'm actually forgetting his name right now, but I interviewed a top producer in Bucks County.
Mm-hmm.
And I had literally about a 4-hour lunch with him over the winter months in a little restaurant, you know, by a fireplace.
Our Bluebell office, right?
Well, no.
Bluebell office?
No.
No.
I can't remember if he was from Bluebell. It probably was Bluebell office. Actually, mm-hmm. it probably was, because I met him in Percocet.
Yeah.
And he was a big influence because he was a top producer. He was a new agent. It was his second year, but his first year he set all records.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured that would be a good person to learn from.
Mm.
And I took that literally 4-hour lunch. I took pages of notes and I decided what he did, what I would feel comfortable doing, you know, based on what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a plan and I executed that plan.
Awesome.
So he was a big influence to me.
Yeah. How about influences inside the Allentown Market Center, which I think was where you began, right?
Right.
Your career.
Well, if I may say, you were a big influence of mine.
Oh,
you were.
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
That.
Yep. And Usha Patel was a great influence. There was some.
I can believe that one.
Right. There were some agents that came on to the Allentown office in the beginning. That the thing about going to Keller Williams, and I remember that first time I went into that office, is I was completely accepted right away. No questions asked. They didn't know who I was. People put out their hands and said, tell me what you need. You know, who are you? Where are you from? Great. You should have a great business. Tell me what you need to succeed, and we'll tell you what we think you need to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surrounded by immediately a bunch of top producers that were just opening their hands and arms to me
mm-hmm.
and telling me they'd help me in every which way. Mm-hmm. And so I was coddled. And I wasn't any different than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amy Cushy, who ended up coming onto my team, she was there at the same time and she was coddled.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a good attempt to try to make her own business, which she did. Amy is one of my buyer specialists. She ran a good business. And this goes back to maybe one of your questions, but Amy didn't like doing everything. Mm-hmm. Her love was to work with buyers.
Sure.
And so she ended up gravitating to being a buyer specialist. We ended up making a deal, and she wouldn't have to do listings. Mm-hmm. So there was that opportunity in the beginning at that office, you know, to meet the right people, to get the right mentorship, mm-hmm. and to grow the right business.
How important is that to be accepted in that way when you come into a company as a new agent?
It's the difference between, you know, up and down and black and white. And I mean, it was just so beautiful. You know, you walk right in the door and right away you're pulled in. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you go into a new business and you feel like a stranger, you know, and you're wondering if, you know, you're going to be pushed in, pushed out. You're wondering if you're going to be accepted or not accepted. You're wondering if you're going to be helped or not helped. But in that office, and I believe the other Keller Williams offices are just the same, you just right away, it's like a sponge. They're waiting for you. Mm. You know, so you get sucked right into it in a good way because you get all that support.
Hmm. Nice. And how long were you with Keller Williams? Because I understand that you were with Keller Williams and Keystone Partners Group for a while.
Right.
And then you went to a competing company. Tell me about that dynamic. And as a, I think you were Rookie of the Year, right?
Yes.
What was the pull? What was the attraction, and how did that work out? Because I'm sure other people feel that same pull from time to time.
Well, I always keep my options open. Mm-hmm. And I profess that to other people too. Because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So it doesn't mean the grass is going to be greener on the other side of the fence, but you don't know what
you don't
know.
But it could be.
It could be.
Sure, yeah.
So I kept my options open. Mm-hmm. And even though I went to Keller Williams, I would interview with other companies.
Yeah.
With really no intention to leave at all, mm-hmm. but just to hear what they had.
Right.
And there was a point in my business, 2007 up to 2007 and 8, and business was great. And then it started to get a little tough. And mm-hmm. that's when we started to switch.
The shift.
A shift. Mm-hmm. And I had a transaction with a broker. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to go to lunch, and he was very charming and charismatic and talked a big talk. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying he talked it improperly.
Yeah.
But it was...
Great communicator.
I got an offer.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? Let me try it. And I did.
What were some of the things that were most attractive about that offer? Was it cultural? Was it compensation? Was it environment? Kind of what appealed to you?
I believe it was in part, it was a few things. It was number one, mentorship that I thought I was going to get from someone I respected. Mm-hmm. And number two, I was quite frankly getting everything that I wanted mm-hmm. on a platter, including right. my own office. Mm-hmm.
Not and just your own office, your own location.
My own location. Yeah, my own office, that. My own location.
Yeah.
And what happened was, in hindsight, I think I didn't have a good grasp of what was important to get me to the next step. Mm-hmm. And so I was a little delusional or confused, you know, blindsided, and thought that this would get me to the next level, the next mm-hmm. step
yeah.
above my ceiling.
Which was your focus, get here, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I didn't learn anything from that sure. relationship. I did. I yeah. absolutely did.
Sure.
I learned not necessarily strategic things about my business, but I learned a couple things that helped me from this point on. But I also learned that the grass is not always green at the other side of the fence.
What were some of the things that you missed while you were there?
It was one thing in particular, one main thing. It was what I called the river of education. Mm-hmm. At Keller Williams, there was always a river of education. All you had to do is just hop off the bank and hop in a boat or hop in the water and boom, you could be educated every which way possible to better help your clients with contract negotiations, better help your clients with contract understanding, growing your business, better support in all different way, shape, and form, all kinds of service provider, education classes, mm-hmm. hiring people for your team to grow your team. I mean, the list was literally endless. And there was not even a trickle of a stream where I went.
Right.
And that's what I missed most. And the first time and the only time during my career, I saw my business take a dip. It was that 1.5 years that I was at another company. And as soon as I went back to Keller Williams, and I didn't decide only to go back to Keller Williams, I interviewed with 3 companies. And I interviewed with my whole team. We took lunches, we took meetings, and as a team, we talked about where we wanted to go and why. And I promised Sean from Keller Williams, if I ever left the company I was with, that I would interview with him. And I wanted to keep, again, an open mind and say, okay, I know that what I had at Keller Williams, that river of education was better, but there's 2 other companies that are telling me they have the same. So let me take a look at everything.
Right.
And we did. And we took at least 2 months, if not 3, to interview with companies. We did
That's a lot of due diligence.
We did our due diligence because this was a move that we wanted to make only one time.
Of course.
And when all the chips were on the table, it was as clear as day where we should make a move. And we went back to Keller Williams.
So when you talk about Sean, you're talking about Sean Morrow, Keystone Partners Group, Director of Growth at this point. So what were some of the things that you talked about with Sean that kind of said, wow, okay, this is why we have to make the decision? Any part of the value proposition that he rehashed with you or went over with you that was part of the decision-making process?
Well, Sean told me in that 1.5 years that I was gone, he told me how Keller Williams grew. And Keller Williams seems to be always growing. You can walk away from Keller Williams a year later, and as far as education and support, you don't think it could get better, but all of a sudden you see new tools that come into play. And there were many new tools that came into play. I would have a hard time articulating which ones they are right now simply because there are so many new tools that came into play in the last 5, 6 years since I came back.
It's a river.
It's just mind-boggling. Yep, right. It's now the Nile or even bigger. Or mighty Amazon. I mean, it's just nonstop.
I heard an interesting saying once that a man can never enter the same river twice because it's a different man and a different river. And I would agree that river's constantly expanding all of the time.
Correct.
All the time. So what are some of the things that you might have done professionally, maybe a course that you did while you were with KPG that really had a huge impact on your ability to go from a salesperson to a business person in real estate?
There are several courses that come to my mind and several full-day seminars that come to my mind. One of them is in learning how to properly hire. I've been to that course 2 times. And probably should go another 2 times. And the tools that I learned in those 2 days of how to properly interview people, qualify people, and also during the interview process, let them get excited about what they're about to undertake with me and set the stage that they're making the right decision as well and getting literally 100 or 100%, 110% buy-in from them before they even start the job and having them completely understand exactly what their position entails so there's no ambiguity. That's one course that is.
I think you're speaking of recruit, select, train,
correct.
Lead, motivate, 4-day program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Anything else that jumps into your mind and say, wow, that had an impact on my business. I took action. It made a difference.
There were many daily seminars that came to play of top producers that are traveling throughout the country and meeting regionally. And we often meet outside off of 202 outside of King of Prussia, you know, at the Penn State campus. And sometimes there's 300 people there. And, you know, you get a top producer that's doing $500 million in business. And for the entire day,
staggering, isn't it?
Right, for the entire day, they're telling you how they run their business. You can have a whole panel of these people. and they're telling you how they run their business, and they're giving you questions and answers, and you're getting breakout sessions, and the ability to be able to say, okay, you know, that would work for me. How do I really do it? Mm-hmm. Those are mind-boggling instances.
Yeah, mind-expanding.
Where usually what I try to do is I try to just learn 1 to 3 things that I'm going to actually implement. Mm-hmm. Because you could walk away with literally 20 pages worth of notes, which can confuse you, and you could and put you underneath it. It could be this high in information that you'll never be able to swim out of it. Mm. So my job is to figure out 1, 2, or 3 things that I could implement in order to really excel to the next level with our team.
Sure. Taking action is the key, I guess. Like, knowledge for knowledge's sake is just entertainment.
Amen.
Yeah. What about personal growth? How do you keep your mindset right? How do you keep yourself sharp so that your business is growing the way you want it to grow?
Well, John Maxwell is a real inspiration to me. Hmm. I've read his books over and over again.
Any favorites of his?
Actually, quite frankly, and I know this is cheesy, but they're all favorites. Mm-hmm. Because there's something in every book that, mm-hmm. that resonates. You know, we did a little book called Eat That Frog in mm-hmm. our office. And that was inspirational because part of my problem always has been trying to do too much at one time hmm. and get too much done too quickly. And after a simple book like Eat That Frog.
That's small. It's tiny, really simple. Yeah.
And it's simple. It's probably, you know, Eat That Frog for Dummies. You know,
simple and profound.
Right. But you learn how to implement strategies one step at a time. And you also learn that if you don't do it today, you will not have started it today, and you're losing a day. So just do one thing, one shot at a time, very slowly, and build upon it. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a lot of personal growth things I do with my family. I have a very, very active family.
Tell me about that.
I have a daughter who's 22, and she's becoming a nurse. And she's on autopilot, thank God. And she's doing very well. Mm-hmm. And then I have 2 younger children, a 9 and a 12-year-old, that constantly teach me a lot, because the 9-year-old rides horses and plays the violin, and she's very competitive. She's a competitive rider. And the 12-year-old is a professional ballerina in Philadelphia 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And personal growth comes from our family's ability to stay sane. It mm-hmm. may sound funny, but we're constantly reading things. We're bringing up articles. Yesterday, we sat down with the family and we strategized, okay, how to make things easier for ourselves. And through that, we all constantly learn lessons on personal growth for ourselves. Because we take those lessons that we're giving to our children, mm-hmm. the lessons that my wife is giving to me and I'm giving to her, in order to manage our family life, and that just overflows into business and my life in general.
Neat. Let's go back into your team again. I'm curious to find out what's one of the biggest mistakes you made in the hiring, and what did you learn from that?
Probably the biggest mistakes I made in hiring was hiring for personality's sake, not doing my due diligence, not taking recruit select, and prior to recruit select, hiring again just based on gut. Mm-hmm. Which my name is Gutman. A lot of people think that's a good thing based on gut, but it doesn't always
not
work.
Not in that case.
It doesn't work. So the right hire is always the most important step in growing a business. And I have successfully learned how not to hire the wrong hire, I believe. There's always a learning curve. You still make mistakes.
Sure.
But that has always been the biggest detriment to our success of our team. Is not taking our time and finding the right hire. Mm-hmm.
You think there's a certain component of failing forward there?
Absolutely.
That most people kind of need to go through?
Absolutely.
Even with good guidance?
Right. Mm-hmm. You need to get burned. You need to trip and fall, pick yourself up and say, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. Learn from the mistakes, but continue on.
Absolutely.
Because what are some of the things that you can do now as a leveraged agent that you might not be able to do if you didn't have a team?
Take off almost the whole weekend. Mm. You know, I have support on the weekends. Mm-hmm. This weekend, I work 2 hours. Some weekends, I don't work any.
Awesome.
Some weekends, I run an open house. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, simply a year ago, I was probably putting in 15 hours on a Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, wow.
And now I probably average about 2 to 3, not including phone calls.
Yeah.
I'm not off of phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
But physically being there, I'm listing properties on the weekends, running open houses. That's now a job for my support staff and my team. Clearly, and they're happy to do it.
Yeah, clearly worth the failing forward, though, on the leverage side, right, to get to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Didn't you just take a vacation? I did.
We did a couple months ago. We took a full week off.
Oh, nice. Where did you go?
We went to a little outside of Cancun.
Oh, that's exciting.
All-inclusive with the kids. It was absolutely wonderful. My phones were answered by my assistant, and I called in twice a day. Usually there was nothing to do because my team protected me. Now, when my team goes away, it's unusual, but I have two team members away now.
Mm-hmm.
I have my listing managers at the shore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he told me he's handling because he started negotiating 3 listings for deals that are going to be closing or going under agreement.
Yeah.
And he told me, I'm just at the shore. I'm going to handle those. He'll take them, which is nice. He didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't fight him on that. I handle any other offers that come in while he's away. And I have Greg, one of my buyer specialists. He's away. He's just got engaged. He's in Costa Rica. He deserves it. And he's spending some quality time with his new fiance. And while they're away, for the most part, well, Greg will not get a call from us at all. And David is only handling what he wanted to handle.
Right.
So that's the beauty of being on a team. They have support.
So
we're handling their clients.
Yeah, you're covering for them every once in a while also.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Give and take.
Yeah. So I know that you branded yourself a long time ago in a specific way. Tell me about that brand and how you've kind of used that and developed that over time.
Okay. Well, my dad had bumper stickers for his businesses, and he was in the nursing home business. And it said simply, "We care."
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started with Keller Williams and started my real estate practice, I was trying to figure out what our slogan would be. And so I figured we would be called the Caring Team.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get a few .coms with caring in it that were still available at that time in the beginning of .coms.
Yeah.
And we became the team that treats everybody with care, honesty, and respect.
Hmm.
And everything we do in our team is with that in mind, to treat everybody we come in contact with, not just our clients, but our service providers, our other agents, with care, honesty, and respect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our tagline, and we truly, truly strive to live up to it every day.
And where do people see that tagline?
Well, they see it on our business cards.
Mm-hmm.
They see it on NathanCares.com, SellAndShopForHomes.com, all of our different websites.
Mm-hmm.
They see it on all of our paperwork that goes out in mailings, on our flyers, on our box flyers, and that are at the homes. And they used to see it because I had for quite some years I had a moving truck which I drove all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it said, do a deal with me and you get this truck for free. And we would let people use our truck. And we had all of our advertisement on the and marketing on the outside of that truck as well.
That's really
so
cool.
So basically it's everywhere.
Yeah. So even on the materials that your team members use?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's one brand, everybody on the team.
Correct.
Right. Now, does anybody on your team work for somebody else part-time or anything like that, or they all work specifically for you?
Well, actually,
except for maybe your buyer specialist remotely.
Right, correct. No, everybody's full-time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important to have full-time agents.
And how about the administrative people? How are they compensated? Do you pay them? Does your company pay them? How does that work?
Well, we have an LLC,
mm-hmm.
so they're on payroll.
So it's your LLC.
It's my LLC.
Right, okay.
So, and of course, indirectly, it's compensated from me, but not really. It's LLC, but, you know, and that's how they get a regular hourly wage.
Okay, great. And you're the one who decides what that is?
Correct.
Fantastic.
Correct. And I love when they get a raise, and they love it too, but we love giving raises because mm-hmm. it means that we're heading in the right direction as a team.
I love that thought. You love giving raises.
Love giving raises.
So the more you're paying people,
the more they deserve.
The more they deserve.
Right.
The better they get, the more you pay them. Win for you, win for them.
Absolutely. Makes them feel better, makes them want to work harder or smarter, you know, makes them feel more they're a part of a team.
Yeah. And I would imagine that would change retention also in a positive way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. How long have some of the people been on your team that have been are with you now? Or do you have a turnover regularly? Or
well, there has been no turnover for over a year and a half.
Wow.
I have my one buyer specialist been with me for over 9 years. My listing manager has been with me now. It's going to be 5 years next year.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
It's exciting also. My other buyer specialist is going on about a year and a half. The gal that I have working for me in Montgomeryville, and I must take back, she's only been with me for about 9 months to a year. She's a different relationship, so technically not on my team. She's a self-sustaining agent.
Right.
My one admin has been with me for a little over a year and a half. And the other admin actually is my wife. Mm-hmm. And she's been with me for a very long time.
Great. So how do you train your admin folks? I mean, you take a month off and sit down with them and show them what to do? Or how does that work?
No, we learn through within Keller Williams. Quite frankly, my one admin is going to be taking a class at Keller Williams, one that she should have taken before, you know, which is a coaching class where she'll be on coaching calls for, I believe it's 3 to 6 months.
Is that the perfect assistant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we're very excited to get started with that. And hopefully that's going to start sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we get a lot of support from the other mega groups in Keller Williams, where we've actually, and my wife's name is Shauna, and she's my admin, we'd actually go over to the Bluebell office and meet with Gary Siegel's team and meet with their admin. And they would plan out exactly what they do for the day. And they'd give us support. And again, that's one of the beauties of Keller Williams. You have all these mentors that are willing to help you, you know, every day of the week. So we've been learning a lot in that regard. And also, there's so many books available at Keller Williams, so many diagrams on how to run an office, you know, that we're able to take those modules out, sit down and go over and say, how do we get this area to be more efficient? And we work on it as a team.
One of the powerful things about a models-based company is the models can be duplicated, right?
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and you and I have had some experience in collaboration as well. We have a mega agent mastermind that I've been a part of for a while that you've joined recently. How important is that to you to be able to kind of sit down and kind of hash things out with other agents at your level of production? I think that mastermind is somewhere between 15 and 30 million or so in volume, the people involved in that.
It's invaluable. Actually, if I would miss one of those masterminds, I would probably be very upset. I formed some good relationships with the other people in that mastermind. I socialize with some of those people in the mastermind, always, quite frankly, maybe it shouldn't be, but always with a business context. We want to get together. We want to talk about business, but we want to do it in a social setting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all business. I am texting some of those people in that mastermind almost on a daily basis. We are troubleshooting similar issues that we have. And I don't want to get specific, but I will be general, like how to get your buyer specialist to the next level, how to make sure your buyer specialist is doing exactly what they should do and getting proper oversight in order to get them to the next level, which gets your team to the next level.
Mm.
And one of the people in that mastermind has the exact same similar problem I have. And it's wonderful to be able to talk to somebody and say, let's hold each other accountable. And let's figure out a way in order to implement the strategies in order to get them to the next level. So it's a win-win for all involved.
Yeah. Failing forward is necessary, but it doesn't always have to be your failure, right?
That's correct.
You can learn from other people, right? That's really kind of neat. What are some of the things that you feel you have to add specifically to other mega agents, things where you're really strong, where you could help the best of the best in getting better at what they do?
So how could I help other mega agents?
What are some of the things you're really strong at? The other mega agents say, wow, let's talk to Nathan about that because that's something he can help us with.
I think we're really good in getting referrals from our current clients.
Mm-hmm.
We have a whole system in play from the first time that I meet with a listing for a potential listing, I set the stage that everything we do is working for referrals. And if we do a good job in taking care of their needs, we know that they'll probably want to give us a referral. So our onus is to make sure we do a good job. And we have a whole system in play that during the course of that transaction, we are consistently asking for referrals. And I've spoke to a couple mega agents, asked them questions on different things that they do. And they asked me about my business. And they were very curious about that part of my business. Because that's, I think, that we could do a better job as well. It's always ways to fine tune everything. But that's something that I like to share with other mega agents that they're not necessarily doing.
And what is something that maybe you want to improve in your business that you would find valuable learning from other mega agents?
There's so many different things to learn from the other agents. A lot of it is specific marketing tools, very simply. Social media marketing tools, which we're not the strongest in, you know, ways for leveraging our time better, you know, ways for managing our team better. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's more than one or two. There's many different areas. You know, I tried just to focus only at one area at a time, try to fine tune an area, bring it up to the next level. And then if there's another area, which is a little rough, then go to the next area.
In Keystone Partners Group, we have something similar to all Keller Williams offices, which would be something called profit sharing, which is not necessarily something that attracts people to our company, but something that can be very attractive once people understand how powerful that could be. What are your experiences with that? What history do you have there?
Profit share is a beautiful thing. And I think it's truly not understood by other companies, and sometimes not understood by some of the agents in our own company. They just don't get it. Profit share is huge. I have profit share months that are in the thousands, not in the hundreds of thousands, but in the thousands.
Give it time.
And right, and I do give it time. And it took me several years to realize the potential of profit share. And of course, you know, you always kick yourself, I wish I would have started that a little earlier. I wish I would have started profit share 5-6 years earlier. I've been with KW for 11 years and probably really only started focusing on profit share in the last 5 years. And I could have been probably exponentially double, triple where I was today. You know, profit share is a no-brainer because, very simply, you don't talk, or I don't talk to an agent and tell them to come into Keller Williams for profit share. I tell them to come into Keller Williams because I think it could enhance their business. Nobody wants an agent to come into Keller Williams to fail. It's not good for anybody.
Nobody
wins. Waste of time, money, energy, and then there's disrespect because you brought somebody into something that's not working. So I'm always very careful to talk to an agent and make sure that I believe they'll truly be a good fit and let them believe that they'll be truly a good fit. And then also then I will try to explain to them and also have our team leaders explain to them the power of profit share, which hopefully they do get. Because it's part of the legacy of giving a legacy. It's a willable asset. I give to my wife, hopefully I outlive her, and then she can give to my kids. It just goes on and on. And it always grows.
So tell me, what was one thing that you did that had the biggest impact on your profit share? Who did you talk to and introduce to Keller Williams that went somewhere and led to something big?
I had a transaction with one of the nicest people in the world. Her name is Diana. Absolutely beautiful person. And we had a transaction. Diana Hodgson. She was in a different company and it went very well. And I absolutely did not talk to her because of profit share. I only talked to her because she was just so wonderful to work with. And I thought her personality fit Keller Williams. Keller Williams, KW cares, you know, and KW people really do care. And she was just a natural fit. And her business was struggling. And I was a pretty new agent at that time, but I was doing pretty good business at that time as well. And I told her what I was doing and how I was doing it, and she got excited. And so she came into Keller Williams, and she came in, and I sponsored her. And the rest was history, very simply. She befriended another agent in the Pocono area, and she brought on a small company. Mm-hmm. And they brought on people. And Diana, she's contagious. Her likability is contagious. So she talks to an agent, and they like her, and mm-hmm. she brings people in. And part of my downline, and maybe the biggest chunk of my downline, and people that are indirectly sponsored by me, are people that Diana brought in. Hmm. So that was one of the catalysts for me really having a big profit share.
Yeah, I remember that. There was actually a delay there, wasn't there? You brought Diana aboard, and she had a conversation with someone up in the north.
Right.
And it kind of didn't go anywhere for a while because there was nothing up there.
Correct.
And then like a year and a half later, right. All of a sudden, as KPG expanded up into the north, there was a place for them to go. And right. They brought on a lot of talent up there, right up to Milford near the New Jersey border,
yep.
Now up into the Wilkes-Barre area and all that whole area. Now.
The beautiful thing about that is also because we, on a pretty regular basis, have referrals up there.
Hmm, yeah.
We have a list, more often than not, a listing that we need to sell, mm-hmm. and that's not my territory. So we have great realtors with representation right up in the Poconos, mm-hmm. right above the Lehigh Valley. It's a beautiful thing.
You can refer right into your own profit share tree.
Right. And I have. And yeah. We just recently did.
Hmm. That's awesome. Tell me about your experiences in consulting with Keystone Partners Group at the Market Center level, at the group level. I know you spent a lot of time consulting with Usha early on in your career.
Correct.
Who has now become the director of productivity coaching for the group. What other experiences have you had with the staff?
A lot. The Rudy Usyk used to be someone who I would meet with on a regular basis, and he would give me mentorship and consulting. Consulting time.
By the way, for our audience, we affectionately refer to Rudy now as our director of fishing and recreation.
Right.
He's retired, but still works with us on an ongoing basis when we need him. He's an amazing guy.
And he's always there for you. I met with him not more than 2 months ago mm-hmm. and chatted with him and talked about business.
Yeah.
You know, he's never ending. There's many people at Keller Williams. Mike Silva from the Silva Group has been a mentor of mine. Mm-hmm. Met him not that long ago over a beer for lunch. Talked about business. I talked about issues that I have and solutions that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And he's a giving person. My understanding, he's doing over $100 million worth of business
yes,
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a giver.
Yes, he is.
There's yourself, Usha Patel, Ty Desa, our team leader at the Lehigh Valley office, is a giver. Whatever I need, if I need to hire someone, or I need to get information in order to break an obstacle open and to be able to make a next step, I can go to my team leader, Ty, sit down with him, tell him what I'm looking for, and he'll make phone calls and he'll find out somebody that can help. I'll give you an example. I wanted to take our open houses to the next level.
Yeah.
So I asked our team leader if they could find someone that kills it with open houses.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I apologize. I don't remember the agent's name. I know his first name is Brad, but he's in Minnesota. And they do most of their business from open houses. And I got on the phone with Brad for about 35, 40 minutes, and he went over his plan. And he told me his plan on how he
wow.
builds his business almost strictly from open houses.
Mm-hmm.
And we took, of the 20 things he told me, maybe one or two, implemented it. And we close more deals now from our open houses. It's not our main focus like it is with him, but it's one way where we got mentorship, we got coaching, we got consulting, and we took a situation and brought it up to the next level.
Let's get real about your schedule,
okay.
about how you get focused on what really matters. How do you plan your week? How do you plan your day?
Well, first of all, my one admin, Heather, schedules my appointments.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing that this year.
Okay.
And that's been a wonderful thing. So between Heather, my admin, and Shauna, my lead admin, and my wife, who is really good at scheduling,
mm-hmm.
she's excellent on that, and I'm not, they have taken over my schedule and kind of told me what I'm going to do and when I'm going to do it to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
So there's oversight that I didn't have even as recent as last year. So there are certain days that we have different markets. We have the Lehigh Valley market and we have Bucks and Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain days I'm in the Lehigh Valley and certain days I'm taking appointments in Bucks and Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every once in a while they have to overlap and things have to change.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, there are times that I meet people for appointments. There's our lead generation time, which is generally in the morning, which is usually kept blank and open for us to make phone calls, to door knock, everything we need to do in lead generation, and appointments get scheduled the rest of the day. So there's always room for improvement in scheduling, at least for me. I'm sure some people are masters at it. And I do appreciate, though, that simple tweak that we did in the last several months in taking some of that off my plate, letting others manage my time, and it's been working like a charm.
Hmm. It's a very common theme that I've experienced in interviewing people above the 15 million level is they're very, very protective of their lead generation time. And it sounds like you are also.
Correct. That's the most important part of the day. You know, you'd like to say, and you do say that, you know, clients are the most important. They are. Because if you don't have a client pool and base, you know, everything comes crumbling down.
Sure.
But you have to get the clients.
Right.
You know, and if you don't put in the time in order to do lead generation, and simply you get caught up one particular week or two particular weeks, because you do have maybe a lot of closings to handle, a lot of people that need some care and time, and you let the lead generation slip, you will absolutely, and when I say you, I actually see a dip in our business.
Hmm.
We see a lull in our business.
So you see a connection between the consistency of your lead generation and the consistency of your gross commission income?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They're tied together.
Sure.
Very, very tightly.
Yeah. So I guess perhaps for our audience, that might suggest why we see this in terms of income for agents who haven't created that habit.
Correct. And it's a scary thing.
Hmm.
Because when you're down at the bottom and you have less income coming in, or in some instances no income coming in, it's going to take 60, 90 days in order to get that going back up.
Right.
And get back up where you're going to be able to sustain your lifestyle. So it's a very scary thing when you see you're on the way down and you believe you're too busy to cut that roller coaster ride down in half, and you don't put your time into your lead generation, you know, it really hurts.
And you could see it coming.
You could absolutely see it coming. You could see it coming because you know how many closings you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could forecast your closings, you know what's on the books, and then you see, let's say, for instance, if there was a lull in August, we would know right now there's a lull in August, and there would be almost nothing we can do in order to get rid of that lull in August. Now we're looking at September and October.
Mm-hmm. So how many people on your team have a responsibility to lead generate at some level?
Three
mm-hmm.
to four, and I'll qualify that. Our buyer specialists make calls as well as I do. They call around open houses.
Okay.
They do just listed calls, just sold calls.
Mm-hmm.
They call to prepare people in the neighborhood that there's an open house coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And they do door knocking and hand out flyers and invite people to open houses.
All synergistic to open houses.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
All of our team, even our admins, work to try to give us names of someone that needs to buy or sell real estate.
Mm-hmm.
David, my listing manager, he doesn't make calls. Now, I allow that because we're usually pretty busy in listings, and I truly want him to be able to give our clients top-notch service because we're trying to generate a lead from that.
Right.
So I don't need him to make calls.
100% service capacity.
Right. He is service capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But he, since David, and this is a key to of hiring the right hire, David has a whole network of friends and family in the Lehigh Valley, which are constantly buying and selling real estate. So David is constantly giving us, constantly, on a monthly basis, giving referrals to our team without doing, quote unquote, lead generation with the rest of us.
Right. Wow.
Yes, it is wow.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
So your day is spent lead generating.
Correct.
And meeting with clients, basically Correct. Listing clients.
Right.
Is there anything else that's an important part of your 20% that I missed?
Well, one of the things that I do is I'm the face on all of our videos. Mm-hmm. So when we do videos, I'm the face of our videos. So I introduce the property. Mm-hmm. One thing I enjoy doing, and I'm not ready to take off my plate, is writing the ad copy. Mm-hmm. I took a couple-year course on marketing, on writing ad copy, not all 2 years of it, but a lot of it, and I enjoy writing the ad copy. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I'm not ready to give up yet, and being the face of our videos. And I am, in part, one of our customer service representatives, making sure that although David is handling 95% of everything, that at least I'm there in order to give support. Mm-hmm. And I believe you mentioned that before. Mm-hmm.
How do you keep from spending money on stuff that doesn't matter? I mean, there's so many organizations and people that would like to have the resources an agent has for any number of reasons. How do you keep from spending money in the wrong places?
Well, it's not easy. That is by making mistakes sometimes and learning. Mm-hmm. I am more cautious now than ever before because I would go to, for instance, MegaCamp, and I would see Trulia or you know, Zillow and listen to their sales pitch and think that it's going to absolutely work for us. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, I believe, for instance, I mentioned those two names. I believe they have good products, but you have to be prepared to be able to support them in the proper way. Mm-hmm. And if your team is not ready for that, it's going to be money that's not well spent mm-hmm. and wasted. I got a call today from a marketing company. I get calls on a regular basis from companies that are trying to sell us stuff. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, I just say, not interested, don't have time for it. And I try only to now utilize what I know is working well for other teams. Mm-hmm. Really proven for other teams. Not something that they just tried 2-6 months ago, but something they've been with a marketing plan or something for several years that's really working. So that way we kind of protect ourselves a little bit better.
Again, using other people's experience.
Correct.
Right.
But we're going to make mistakes, unfortunately. I shouldn't say it like that, but I know we're still going to make mistakes. Hopefully sure. we just learn by them.
Tell me about what you'd like your team to be associated with. What do you want people to think of when they think of your team?
I want them to really feel like we have their best interest at heart. Mm-hmm. That we are educated, we're experienced, we know how to drive, so to speak, because we are in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. However, everything we do is to keep their best interest at heart. I don't want them ever to lose sleep that we have any ulterior modem except for their greatest success.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if everybody felt that way, you'd have a lot of trusting and loyal clients, which you already do.
Right. And we tell that to people. I tell to the clients when we meet them, everything we're going to do is to put your interest at heart. And if you feel at any time that we're not doing that, just call me directly and I'll come right over and I'll sit down with you and we'll have a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And I also tell them we're human. We can make a mistake. If I do, I will immediately rectify it. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, someone says, you know what? I think we need to chat. And to me, the hairs stand up on the back of my back or wherever they are. and I run over and we're all very conscientious. We just want to make sure that they feel that we really do have their best interests at heart, which we do.
Hmm. How do you drive that kind of thinking through your team? How do you make sure that everybody on your team is thinking in the same way with respect to how you want the public to view you?
Every Tuesday, we have a team meeting. And at that team meeting, we talk about the good and the bad that happened during the course of the week. Mm-hmm. Things that went really well and things we could have done better. We also talk about our clients and what they've been saying about us. I'm fast in the meetings in order to give compliments and pats on backs to our clients mm-hmm. and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm also very quick, if something maybe wasn't brought up to par, to talk to our agents and tell them, agents on our team, to tell them what someone felt like maybe could have been done a little bit better. And we brainstorm it because sometimes you can't be everything to everybody. And even though you have that conscientious drive in order to make sure that they're completely satisfied, sometimes there's a need that maybe can't be met. And sometimes I strive for that need, even maybe when it's not possible. Mm-hmm. And for an example, I'm just starting to learn this. I went to a client last week to take on them as a listing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I'd be able to meet their expectations. There's specific needs that they had. And I didn't think it would fit within our team. They wanted me to sign them up. And maybe a year ago, I would have done it. Mm-hmm. But that would have put us in a no-win situation. And it would have put my team in a no-win situation where they may have very well taken the brunt of that situation.
Sure.
And when I said, I don't think we're the best match to this nice couple last week, I actually thought about my team and the expectations that the couple would have and the drive that my team would have to satisfy and that it would maybe never match up. Hmm.
Do you think your teams come to expect that of you?
Yes.
Look after them?
Absolutely.
Look out for them?
Absolutely. They want me to have their back. Hmm. I know that. We talk about that.
Yeah.
That's something I want my team to always feel.
Yeah.
I want them to feel that I treat my team with care, honesty, and respect. Mm-hmm. The same way we treat everybody else. And that I have their back. And I'm not going to keep them out, you know, and put them out in the field in a fire and just leave them there. Hmm. And we talk about things like that.
Yeah.
It's very important that they know that I have their back.
You think that breeds the same kind of thinking when it comes to them looking after you?
Yes. I think what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And I think they also, listen, if I trip and fall, unfortunately or fortunately, in my current position, taking on what I do in my team, if I trip and fall, they may be right behind me. Mm-hmm. So they may trip and fall.
Right.
And so they realize that we are also just directly connected. Hmm.
So what's the future hold for the Nathan Gutman team? What do you see as an ultimate vision for your real estate business?
Well, I see a vision of having several agents in at least Montgomeryville and Bluebell, having somebody to replace me to actually do the listings throughout our whole territory of the Lehigh Valley and Bucks and Montgomery, to having David Amelie possibly be my listing specialist where he actually takes on the listings or where we have a listing specialist that he works with and he still manages the listings. To have a full-time inside sales assistant, at least one, and eventually several, so that maybe to a degree our buyer specialist could be removed from making those calls because they'll just be so busy handling clients that they won't need to make those lead generating calls. I'm trying to explore if that's really the proper model. I'm always investigating, am I trying to reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
Or is the wheel already there that I could just grab onto? Because it's always better if you don't reinvent the wheel.
Sure.
You know, I would like to, within 2 years, be doing $40 to $50 million in business in the Lehigh Valley, including some of the business in Bucks and Montgomery. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why next year we're not going to hit $25 to $30 million the way we're going right now.
And when you hit that vision, what will be your new role? Will your role change at all?
Well, my day-to-day activities will eventually evolve into just managing and oversight of the whole team. During the course of that transition, I will remove myself from going on listing appointments, have someone handle that for me, remove myself from making the calls in order to the people that are coming in on leads, and just go into a managerial type of position. Eventually, and I hope this happens in approximately 7 years, I'll have somebody that's actually managing the whole company, the whole Nathan Gutman Caring team. And I'll be simply as a board of director or as the chairman of the board, watching what they do and monitoring them and just keeping my feet just slightly wet in the day-to-day operations of the business, but just slightly, maybe only coming into the office once a week.
Wow.
And letting the office run itself.
Awesome. So in the coming years, Do you feel that we might see a shift in the economy or in real estate in any way? And if so, how do you approach preparing for that?
Well, I'm always thinking about the shift in the economy. I do know from the last shift in 2008 until present, a year or so ago, and that you should actually, a good agent should actually sell more when the business shifts. There's less competition. A lot of agents fall out. There's becomes more part-time agents. And so the competition is not as tough. So there's no reason that a shift should cause a good agent running a successful team to go down in business.
How does the average agent prepare for a shift? What do they do now to make sure that the shift doesn't affect them like it may affect the majority of people who are not prepared or don't care to prepare?
I believe the key is several things, but number one, staying lean. You know, keeping your expenses down so that you could weather a storm. You know, in case your business would take a dip, your expenses are already tight to the bone. Your team understands that everything you do is to survive for the benefit of the whole team. And let them grasp that. I mean, we all went through the recession. Nobody wants to go through that again. It affected everybody in many, many different ways. So it's I believe right now, it's easy to get buy-in from the team in order to do what's right, in order to prepare for another shift.
Awesome. As you move closer to your vision and that becomes a reality, how do you want to be remembered? What kind of legacy do you want to leave, maybe for your family, for the community, for the world?
Well, I would truly hope that everybody that came into contact with myself on our team, you know, has just good things to say about us, that we helped them, we provided them with value. My family, I would like to take care of them financially. Let them know that, you know, financially they're set. My kids are set for college. You know, they're set for support, and hopefully their grandchildren are set. You know, I want them to know, I want my family, my kids, and my wife to know that everything I did was not just caring for the caring team, but caring for the family as well.
So what will you do for fun once you see the level of success that you're already well on your way to? Obviously, you're a very successful guy. I have no doubt that you'll meet your target for that $50 million. It's a matter of time. What are some of the things you want to do? Experience, go, travel.
Well,
what does that look like?
Maybe a lot more than what I do now, but similar. You know, spend time with my kids, a lot more time with my kids. Be able to support them, not financially, but time-wise, emotionally-wise, with more time that I'd have on my side. Take more vacations. One thing we really can't do too much right now is take one-on-one vacations with my wife and I. It's more so due to my kids' schedule, but I could see that opening up as my kids get older, being able to travel more with my wife and do a lot of hiking, you know, a lot of camping out, a lot of outdoor recreational fun, and just enjoying life.
Sounds wonderful.
It is. It does sound wonderful.
Nathan, I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it's been to spend time with you. I know you are a really busy guy. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today on the Get Real Show and sharing so much with our audience. And I just want to thank you for that and you know how much it means to us.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Anytime.
Absolutely. And for our guests, I'm looking forward to each of you joining us again for the Get Real Show with Keystone Partners Group as we continue to explore those myths and mysteries and remove them so that you could see success in the real estate world.